There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The rugby is underway down in Joburg. We'll give you an update on that shortly. We're keeping an eye on stage 14 of the Tour de France. There is also moving Saturday over at the Open Championship in Carnoustie. All of that updates and much more to come between now and 6 o'clock. I just want to just park ourselves on cricket for a moment or two, because Pakistan, we were just talking before we got cut off there, that Pakistan are moving in the right direction as a cricketing nation. They are making Zimbabwe to look incredibly abject, as much as Zimbabwe are making themselves look incredibly abject as well, because they have just not arrived at this party.
Yeah, massive win for Pakistan yesterday. They're playing a one-day series against Zimbabwe, and it's a massive result. 244-run victory in the fourth ODI. Pakistan scored 399 for one. Opening partnership, Chris, was 304. Opening partnership between Fakhar Zaman, who scored the double 100, 210 not out, and Imam Al-Haq, 113. So it's a massive score. They've then gone on and bowled Zimbabwe out for only 155 and 42 overs. And it's a very one-sided competition. But you can only play what's in front of you.
Absolutely.
You have to score the runs off the bowlers that are they're doing the job. And it's been a big, big win for Pakistan. So another comprehensive victory yesterday by 244 runs, which is a massive margin of victory in a ODI.
Absolutely, Azhar Ali getting 50. I did say it was Fakhar Zaman making 213. I got it wrong. It was 210. It was Imam Al-Haq who got 113. So Pakistan, fine form indeed. 4-0 up in the series. And if I was a betting man, I would back them to make it a clean sweep in that fifth ODI. What about India as well? We saw England defeat India, coming back from a 1-0 down to win the ODI series 2-1 ahead of the Test series, which gets underway on August the 1st. A five-match Test series we've got to look forward to over the course of August into September as well. A couple of storylines coming out of that one. Joe Root, back-to-back centuries for Joe. Perfect, I guess, response to being dropped for the final T20. Owen Morgan dropping Joe Root in favour of Ben Stokes. He comes back out in this ODI series, hits back-to-back centuries, and he's now up to second in the ODI batting rankings.
And did you see his celebration?
I did indeed, the bat drop.
He dropped the mic. Yeah, so look, good to see Joe Root come into form. He's a fine player in all three formats of the game. He'd been suffering a bit. I mean, England are so strong at the short form of the game that they had to find some space in the T20 version. But he's such a valuable player because he's not what you'd call a power hitter, but he manipulates the ball. He means he moves the field around. He can nudge it in the gaps, but he also can hit boundaries when required. So Joe Root coming back into form for England. And it does set up the Test series nicely. You see Joe Root being the leading batsman for England. You see Virat Kohli is going to step to the fore for India. You know that in the Test series. And it's two well-balanced teams going head-to-head in that Test series. England have been poor in Test cricket recently. For all their form in one-day cricket and white ball cricket, T20s, they've been poor form in Test cricket. Joe Root's come back into form at the good time. And then it's going to be a really well-balanced contest between five Test matches between England and India.
Talk to me about the Chinaman who's been given a call-up from by India. Not a Chinaman as in from the country of China. It is a left-arm spinner by the name of Kuldeep Yadav, who looks to me at 23 years of age. He took 6 for 25. Best ever figures for a left-handed spinner in that opening ODI. He is an absolute superstar in the making. He is causing England batsmen sleepless nights, I think, with his deliveries. He's been called up to the 18-man India squad. Will he start the opening test?
I'll ask with a quiz question, Chris. What exactly is a Chinaman?
It is a left-arm spinner that can... He's got the wrongings, isn't it?
He's a left-arm leg-spin bowler.
That's
so he's
it.
Not left-arm orthodox. He doesn't bowl from off the leg. He's a left-arm leg-spinner bowler. And the reason that they're so successful is there's not many of them around. The last sort of best example of a Chinaman was a guy called Paul Adams, South African bowler that came in the late 90s. He bamboozled England. I was playing cricket in South Africa at the time, and he bamboozled
You as well, I'm sure.
No, 49 not out.
Oh, decent. Okay,
team was bowled out for 74, and I was 49 not out. So I did okay. But he's tremendously hard to read, and you just don't play against them very often. So they come along once in a decade, and you're just not experienced playing left-arm unorthodox spin, left-arm leg spin. So he's been brought to the team after one-day success. They couldn't play him in the one-dayers. They couldn't play him in the T20s, and now he's been brought in the Test squad. So it will be interesting to see how he goes on Test wickets in England that don't tend to spin as much. But this series is late in the summer. It's in August and September. So the pitches will be drier, and they should turn a bit more. In the early season Test matches in the UK, in sort of May and June, it always favours the green seamer. The pitches are green, it's early season, the right, you know, still a bit of weather. But as so this may be a master blow, you know, a master shock by India to really maybe do some damage. So it will be interesting to see how Kuldeep does in that in the Test series.
It gives you an idea of just the strength and depth that India possess. Rohit Sharma, who's been in such great form from an ODI perspective, not in the 18-man Test squad. And as we were getting a lot of texts in on Sports Tonight, I mean, who would you drop in favour of Rohit Sharma? But again, just shows you the strength and depth that India currently possess. You throw in Kuldeep Yadav into the mix, you look at their batting lineup that they've got as well. Virat Kohli, star among them, of course. India are going to take some stopping, I'm sure, over the course of this Test series. They won the T20 series by 2-1. England bounced back to win the ODI series 2-1. Let us know who you're backing to win the Test. The first of those five getting underway on August the 1st. We will continue build up towards that one over the course of the next week and a half on Sports Tonight, so stay tuned for that. Want to break away from the cricket very quickly and talk Formula 1. The German Grand Prix qualifying is underway, and Matthew Fortune, who's alongside us, he's just scribbled on my notepad, Hamilton out.
Indeed,
tell us more.
Indeed it is, Chris. I don't really know where to begin for the drama, actually. Well, the rain cleared up. We were talking in final practice that only nine drivers were able to clock a time due to the poor weather. Well, by qualifying that started about 25 minutes ago, the weather had cleared up by that point. And as you say, Lewis Hamilton, who qualified fifth in Section 1, is seen, and I'm frantically on social media trying to find a picture of this, pushing his car back to the pits. He was on the radio shortly before saying that the gears wouldn't change, and he tried to push his car back but was able to get back in time, and Lewis Hamilton is out of qualifying. His body language in the one picture I have seen is not looking good, and it's a big disappointment for him, of course, on the home turf of his title rival Sebastian Vettel. The other interesting news coming out of part one of this qualifying is that we had two track records. Incredible scenes. Both the Ferrari drivers clocking track records. Sitting on top pretty is Kimi Raikkonen. Sebastian Vettel just 0.38 of a second behind his teammate. But those are two track records for Hockenheim. Incredible scenes.
It will mean, incidentally, as well, with Lewis Hamilton out in Q1, he will be starting tomorrow's German Grand Prix in 14th. We have seen him cut through the field, sigh through the field in previous races. He's a master at it, is Lewis Hamilton. He's going to have to produce yet more fireworks tomorrow if he is to stem the bleeding of what I'm sure will be more lost points, unless, of course, anything untoward happens to Sebastian Vettel tomorrow. But Lewis Hamilton, yet again, being let down by the Mercedes, and heads will roll in that Mercedes garage. Toto Wolff has already spoken this past week, Mark Archer, of the need for Mercedes to get back the consistency that we've seen in recent seasons. And what have they gone done? They've gone and broken down in Q1.
I tell you what, though, for the neutrals of the sport, and there's a few amongst us, Lewis Hamilton starting down the grid actually makes for a better race. It means he's got to overtake, and we know that's his strength. We know he's arguably the best driver in Formula One. It actually makes the race more interesting, and we've been proponents of trying to spice Formula One up for a number of years. And Bernie Eccleston never gave us the call for our advice. We see the new owners haven't given us advice, but I'm still in favour of some sort of seeding system throughout the season where some of the slower drivers or some of the less fortunate smaller budget cars do get a chance up the grid for some things. I'm not sure how they manage that, but it makes for the races much more interesting and takes away some of the importance of qualifying when some of the fastest cars or some of the slower cars have a wild card up their sleeve that they can trumpet in at some stage of the race and get an advanced grid position. We know Daniel Ricciardo will be down the grid tomorrow as well, so we're going to see one of the fastest Red Bulls, one of the fastest Mercedes down the grid, which should make for a heck of an interesting race.
Absolutely.
It may be that the two Ferraris are going to, if they lock up number one and two in the grid, are going to be tough to catch, but it's going to make a heck of an interesting race down as Mercedes and Red Bull try and catch up the ground.
Well, Lewis Hamilton, I'm sure, despite starting in 14th, will already be thinking, at least finish third, at least get myself up onto the podium, get myself points, and as I say, stem the damage that will be done. We've talked about it at length, Matt, about what needs to be done, and in fairness, F1 has had a bit of a renaissance this year, given the fact that we've seen three teams, competitive teams, which in itself means six drivers who are competing: Kimi Raikkonen, Sebastian Vettel, Valtteri Bottas, Lewis Hamilton, and the two Red Bulls of Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen. I've got to give you full props for this one, Mark Archer. This is your idea. I've told it to so many people now, it takes an age to explain, and I'll try and do it as quickly as I possibly can, and the feedback has been very positive. So essentially what you do is you limit the season to 20 races, 20 drivers. Okay? So 20 drivers, 20 races. Qualifying is still important. You still qualify as you normally would. But what you say to the man that finishes fastest is, right, You pick your spot. Let's use the Australian Grand Prix, the opening race of the 2019 season. Let's say that Lewis Hamilton qualifies in pole. He then gets the decision, where do you want to start this race? Because over the course of a 20 race season with 20 drivers, it means you will have to start in each of 1 to 20 once across the whole season. You will only ever start on pole once. You'll start second once, third once, fourth once, fifth once. And of course, by it still allowing following qualifying, it still makes qualifying important because it gives you full autonomy to choose where you want to go in the seeding. Like the idea?
Absolutely sold. I think it's fascinating.
It would make it great, right?
For someone that slightly rolled their eyes when we began talking about motorsport, Mark's put an awful lot of thought into this one.
And to be fair, Archie, it's the best idea that I think anyone has come up with regarding qualifying and how you make it much more of an even playing field. Because what you're doing there is, okay, your Mercedes, your Ferraris, your Red Bulls will still qualify, you'd expect, in pole in the top six positions. But then it becomes a real... then it becomes a real game, a tactical cat and mouse. Because, for example, you might think, let's take my hit early. We've qualified on pole. We want to start 20th. Let's get our 20th done and dusted now and see if we can side through the field and even pick up some points. What it's also doing is it's allowing the smaller teams to have their moment in the sun because, as I say, they'll be on pole. They'll be at the top of some races. I personally, from a racing standpoint, think it makes the sport that much more intriguing.
It's a very American system, isn't it, where you... see in the NFL and the NBA and all their major league sports where the team that finishes last get the first pick of the talent. They get to trade, you know, level the playing field against the smaller budget cities or smaller budget franchises. And I would expect over the course of a season that the three dominant teams will still be the three dominant teams that they are now. It'll still be Red Bull, still be Mercedes, still be Ferrari. But it creates more drama throughout the season.
Absolutely.
It creates more of a impetus there. If a team can get some momentum, it can find some speed, it gives them a chance.
Absolutely.
And we don't, you know, we don't know who's going to win the races. You know, it just gives it more open, more of an open feel. I doubt those big teams are going to buy into it. I doubt it's going to be sold to those big big manufacturers. But it's going to give some teams that with small budgets, with smaller resources, a much more opportune chance to be competitive at Formula 1. And I think that's ultimately, as a neutral fan, that's what you want.
It certainly will. Let us know your thoughts on that 4001. You're sold?
I'm sold on that, absolutely. I do worry how competitive we want to make it, really, if you think about it. I mean, there's not a lot of sports where there's an insistence that all those competing have a fair shot at it. If you look back, I think about 15, 16 years ago, Michael Schumacher won the title with six races to go. You know, more than a third of the season to go. So the fact that we have six drivers sort of sniffing around, I think, is quite interesting. Perhaps there's an alternative where you almost tier the levels of success, potentially, so there is greater incentive for the people that are chasing that top six. But to dilute the skill set of those right at the top end, I'm not sure about. But as a concept, it's certainly the most interesting I've heard.
Let us know your thoughts on that. 4001, it is a mission of Mark Archer. I think he is providing a business case to present to Liberty Media Group, the owners of F1. We will keep you up to date on how successful he is. I personally think it's the best idea that has been put forward, just how to level the playing field a little bit. But as Matthew Fortune rightly points out, the voice of reason in all of this, it's very rare that sport is a level playing field. Keep your thoughts coming in on 4001. When we get back, we are into the final half hour of the show. We'll give you an update on what is going on over in France. There's the leaderboard as well over in the UK, the Open Championship at Carnoustie, and we'll give you an update on what's happening in that final quarter-final of the Super Rugby. Stay tuned.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Speaking of the biggest sporting stories right now, welcome back to The Grill, live down here at Baraste. Myself, Chris McCarty, Mark Archer, and making his debut this afternoon. I think he's doing all right thus far. Pass marks all round for Matthew Fortune. He's alongside us as well. Let us put you in the picture of some of those big sporting stories. There's an awful lot of live sport ongoing. Let's start, if we can, with the golf over at Carnoustie. It is moving Saturday of the 147th Open Championship. Tiger Woods is out on course. And what a start, Mark Archer.
Yeah, we've seen some scoring today. The conditions are relatively benign. I'll bring you details of Tiger Woods' start to his course, but the leaders will not go out till 7 p.m. UAE time. It's the final group. The leaders at 6 under par, the American combination of Zach Johnson and Kevin Kisner. Round of the week so far has gone to the Englishman Justin Rose, who shot a round of 7 under par today, a round of 64. That's the best round of the week. He's moved from well down the leaderboard on the cut mark to move up into a tie for sixth. So he's done very well indeed. Other scores of note, Englishman Chris Wood is 5 under par, and there are plenty of red numbers. But Tiger Woods, so far today, is moved to 2 under par. He's had birdies at the fourth and the sixth hole, and he's starting to get some momentum. He's up to a tie for 21st. If he can get some more birdies, if he can go 5 or 6 under today, dare I say it, he will be in contention tomorrow. But his conditions are the best of the week for scoring. There are going to be players who are going to put plenty of numbers in red today. But as it stands, the leaders will go out at 7 p.m. UAE time. Zach Johnson and Kevin Kisner will tee off. It'll be late into the night. Chris, you'll be able to get home, get on the couch, get the missus with a bit of dinner, and you'll be able to watch the final round of the third round of the plays action today. So Tiger Woods making some headway up the leaderboard, as are plenty of players. The numbers are mainly red today.
You know me too well, Mark Archer. That is exactly what I am doing with my Saturday evening. Let's talk Formula One as well. It is qualifying over in Germany. The Hockenheim Ring brought back into the fold this year, and the big news thus far, Matt, is the fact that Lewis Hamilton out in Q1. He will start tomorrow's German Grand Prix in 14th.
Absolutely. Hamilton experiencing gearbox problems to the end of Q1. Had actually clocked the fifth fastest time in that section, so was looking pretty comfortable. He was behind his rival for the title, Sebastian Vettel, as well as his teammate Valtteri Bottas and Sebastian Grosjean. But the problems arose about 3 or 4 corners from the end, which led to pictures which were a throwback to the 80s. And I'm going to say this like it was my own information before I found it online, of Nigel Mansell in Dallas in 1984, predates even mine and yours existence,
it
Chris.
It certainly does.
Of seeing Lewis Hamilton trying to push his car back to the pit lanes. I found the picture of him crouched over on his haunches by the side of the car, almost whispering to it, saying, why now? Why?
Mark Archer, 1984. I think you would have been celebrating your 30th birthday in 1984, were you?
Not quite. I don't remember Nigel Mansell pushing his car back there, but I can imagine how grumpy Lewis Hamilton, who's a pretty grumpy man at the best of time, when everything's not going his way and he hasn't got the fastest car and he's not number one on the grid and the team pull him in for the wrong pit stops. He's a grumpy man, and I'm sure he's not going to be happy with his mechanics today because he's had to pull out of qualifying. But we will see an interesting race tomorrow where he's going to have to do some work. He's going to have to earn that new $40 million a year paycheck by coming from the back of the field, that new contract he's just signed with Mercedes. So I guess, look, you know, you earn the cash, you've got to put a performance in. So that will be Lewis Hamilton tomorrow, earning that new $40 million a year contract.
And speaking of that contract, Matt, you've just found a nice little tweet that's gone viral, as often so often these kind of things do, which is a breakdown of what Hamilton equating his $40 million a year contract into what that is per week, per day, per hour, and per second.
And it's only just a little bit less than what they're paying me to appear here today, Chris. If we just break it down.
Are you getting paid? It's
some absolutely staggering figures. 1.9 million a race.
Wow.
And you break it all the way down. It's one. So in the time I've been speaking, which is about 7 seconds, he's earned 10 quid.
He's earned £10 in 7 seconds. That is astonishing. It makes him the highest paid British sportsman now. I think Floyd Mayweather was in 2017 the highest paid, as you'd expect. Conor McGregor second, the Irishman. Lewis Hamilton now, $40 million a year with endorsements thrown in as well, swells it to plus $50 million a year, all for driving a car round a track.
Well, I suspect looking at him now, he would have donated a little bit of that to have a better gearbox this afternoon.
Absolutely. He might just be questioning signing that new contract as well. He's made no secret in the past of his love for Ferrari, but he does seem, well, he more than just seems, he has put ink to paper, and he will be at Mercedes now through to 2020. Just one other live score to bring you up to date with, or at least live update. It is the fourth quarter final of Super Rugby. It is quarter final weekend in Super Rugby. We're down to Joburg.
Yeah, it's Emirates Park in Johannesburg. It's Lions hosting the Jaguares from Argentina, and the local team has come out strong. 30 minutes gone in this match, and it's the Lions 24, the Jaguares 6. Tries to Combrink, Voster and Malcolm Marks have gone over. All three tries have been converted by Elton Yankees, who's also kicked a penalty. So it's the Lions 24, it's the Jaguares 6. Wins earlier today, they will take on, the winner of this match will take on New South Wales, who defeated the Highlanders 30 points to 23. The other semi-final will see the defending champions, the Crusaders, host the Hurricanes next week.
We're talking as well Tour de France, stage 14 today. Geraint Thomas and it is Chris Froome, the two Team Sky teammates, going at it. It is Geraint Thomas who is in possession of the yellow jersey, 1 minute 37 seconds ahead of the reigning four-time Tour de France champion in the shape of Chris Froome. Interesting as well, Sir Bradley Wiggins, he's been joining the coverage over in the UK of ITV4. They are the main broadcasters of the Tour de France over in the UK. And in fairness to the guys, they've told his PR manager that we want to get Sir Bradley Wiggins in. He's agreed to it, but they've not held back. They've asked him some tough questions.
There's some fascinating stuff coming through, Chris. So while the race potters along and a bigger gap gets between the main group and the peloton, Bradley Wiggins, as you say, is on British television and making some very thinly veiled swipes against those, of course, who have levelled criticism against him over his, now if I get it right, the TUEs, his inhaler, which curiously he never mentioned having an asthma problem in his autobiography.
No,
but
didn't.
That's another conversation. Anyway, Wiggins is suggesting here, and forgive me if I read this block of quotes out. He's talking on television and he has said this: there are things that have come to light with this whole thing that we've found out since that are quite scary and actually very sinister. We're still not at the bottom of it. We're finding new stuff out daily to do with the package that never was. And all this stuff, it's quite frightening, actually. So exactly what he's talking about, nobody knows. And we're trying to get a stream from ITV4 to try and pick up exactly what is being said. But these quotes, these are bound to make back page news.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow. This is staggering stuff. Wiggins is seeming to suggest that there are darker forces at play here. This is not just an attack on him or an attack on Sky. He is suggesting something much more sinister. So we are going to stay close to this one.
Absolutely. So Bradley Wiggins, TUEs, some of you might be asking as well, therapeutic use exemptions. And we spoke to David Miller down at Jumeirah Al Nassim. He was over there last year. And he, a man that has been found guilty in the past of doping, admitted the culture that was created in the Lance Armstrong, the forgettable now Lance Armstrong era. He was of the opinion that TUEs need to be scrapped, full stop. There is no place for grey areas in cycling. So interesting there, and we will keep an eye on what Sir Bradley Wiggins is saying, because it would suggest to me that essentially, and I'll do his talking for him here, he's intimating that there's a conspiracy either against him or against Team Sky. We'll keep an eye on it.
The package that never was, Chris. So that is really ringing in my ear, that one. That is staggering from
that
Wiggins.
That never was. We will keep an eye on it. A penny for the thoughts of Matt Lawton, or was it not Matt Law or Matt Lawton, I think it was, who broke the news over for the Daily Mail in the UK. He has been on top of that story for an awful long time now. Of course, all of the speculation, the unsavoury speculation that has surrounded Team Sky to do with Sir Bradley Wiggins in that infamous Jiffy bag. We'll keep an eye on that particular story. It has just gone 6:15 on your Saturday evening. A big thank you, as always, for tuning in to The Grill on your Saturday. I know there's plenty of other things you could be doing with your afternoon, but a big, big thank you to each and every one of you who have tuned in this afternoon. I just want to pick up on another story that caught my eye today, and it is in the world of football. Huge money being spent. We know the influx of cash now in the game. It is quite eye-watering at times, the money that has been spent on TV rights, which is then funneling all the way down to hopefully grassroots level. Everton Football Club, now managed by Marco Silva, they finally got their way. They got the Portuguese manager in from Watford, although he was sacked by Watford, and then of course he's ended up at Goodison Park. Talk today that they are readying or closing in on the £50 million capture of Richarlison.
Yeah, fascinating news that. This is Richarlison, who is 22, I believe.
Uncapped
by his country. To be fair, there was a lot of competition for him when he joined Watford, so there's obviously a relationship there. So it's understandable why Marco Silva has gone back for a little bit of home comforts by bringing him into the club. But £50 million for a player who failed to really do anything in the second half of that season. The wheels came off, interesting, when the wheels came off the Marco Silva bandwagon, when he was very openly flirting, shall we say, with Everton Football Club. The Richarlison form fell off a cliff. I think he was everybody's, certainly mine and yours, Chris, fantasy football pick early doors. £5 million and all the money and all the points were coming in. But it's staggering. I saw something today that it's a sign of the lunacy in the Premier League market that him, and then look at Laporte, who went to City in January, another £50 million player, also not capped by his country. It's a fascinating time in the Premier League as well. A curtailed transfer window, a shorter time to make a transfer after the World Cup. I think this is going to be absolutely the norm in the next 3 weeks because there is a lot of panic buttons being hit.
5 goals he scored in his first 12 Premier League games, did Richarlison. And then, as you say, he went quiet in the second half of the season, and yet Watford have had the gall to ask for £50 million, and Everton have said no problem at all. And as we were talking about off-air on the way down here this afternoon, that is one problem that was glaringly obvious with Everton last season, was a lack of pace, directness. Adding Richarlison, they've now got that. Yannick Bolasie coming back to full fitness. Ademola Lookman as well, coming off the back of an excellent loan spell over in Germany with RB Leipzig. All of a sudden, Everton look a bit more as if they've got a bit of pace and directness about them.
Well, they've also been with Wilf Zaha, of course, with Malcolm at Bordeaux, so they're certainly addressing the problems of the previous summer where they really overstocked on creative one-pace number 10s. If you look now with Rooney out the window, you'd think that one of those players, Gylfi Sigurdsson, who perhaps felt a little bit cowed by Wayne Rooney back at his boyhood club, might put his foot in that number 10 position and not let it go. Cenk Tosun was an excellent signing for them last season, really, I think, exceeded expectations. There was, because the fee was minimal, I believe £14 million, he'd had a couple of good seasons, and the fact that he actually hit the ground running in a club that was not performing very well at all. Everton look interesting, and if Marco Silva is the right fit, I mean, and you would hope they would because they've chased him for about 18 months, it's an interesting side there, and as you say, fixing the problems. We go back to the conversation we were having about Liverpool earlier and paying over the odds for players. If it fixes a problem, is that a problem to be spending that much money?
No,
I don't think it is.
Absolutely, and I think an awful lot of managers have turned to that level of thinking as well. Why try a perhaps, and again, there's no guarantees that an Alisson will do well, an Abby Keita will do well, but they've done their extensive research, they've scouted them, and they are the real deal. Certainly from what we've seen, Naby Keita's case at RB Leipzig and Alisson's case at AS Roma as well. The other club that I want to just very briefly touch upon that I've been impressed with, and I know you'll get on your high horse in a second, Matthew Fortune, is West Ham United. They have gone about their business, Manuel Pellegrini. I like Felipe Anderson. I like Ryan Fredericks. Idrissa Diop as well, the young centre-half they've signed from Toulouse. And your favourite footballer of all time, Jack Wilshere, has also checked in at that football club. All of a sudden, West Ham, having before, and we all know, or certainly it's well documented, that David Sullivan, the co-owner, one of the co-owners at that football club, he was doing an awful lot of the deals, and you can tell buddies, old agents, phoning up David and asking him to pick up their players. It looks as if they've got a structure now in the transfer market, and West Ham, and again, I appreciate Everton, we all said the same thing about Everton 12 months ago in the transfer market, but West Ham on paper at the very least look as if they're moving in the right direction.
Absolutely, and again, addressing problems. A lack of creativity in that number 10 slot, Jack Wilshere fits it. Lack of pace out wide, you've got Yarmolenko, of course, and as you say, Felipe Luiz fixed it. If you look at that front five now at Everton, Felipe Luiz, Yarmolenko, Jack Wilshere sitting in behind, and then the intelligence and the movement of Hernandez and Arnautovic, that's a pretty impressive front five. And with the manager there as well, who instantly command respect.
Absolutely.
And the great David Moyes debate, whether you like him or not, or whether you think he overachieved, underachieved, over-criticised, he wasn't inspiring those players. He was an uninspiring appointment. Whereas you look at a manager who's got incredible pedigree, a title-winning manager, no less, in the Premier League, I think it's a brave new dawn for Manchester City. And like you say, the much maligned ownership really, really dipping their hand into their pocket. So fair play to them.
Absolutely. West Ham fans, keen to hear your thoughts on this. Undoubtedly, I think West Ham are a team to watch next season. The business they've done has been very impressive. Let us know. 4001. I know there's one or two West Ham fans out there, so let us know your thoughts on that. When we come back, it is 10 to 6. We're wrapping up this evening. We will tell you who is on pole for tomorrow's German Grand Prix. We'll keep an eye on Tiger Woods as well. He started barnstorming start to his third round, and we'll also tell you what's going on in the rugby. Keep your thoughts coming in. 4001.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
The game is on. There are many screens dotted around Barasti, each of them covering all the live sport. An awful lot going on this afternoon. Before we talk a little bit of boxing to round off the show this evening, let us put you in the picture with what is going on from a live perspective. I'm going to start, if I can, with the Open Championship. It is moving Saturday.
147th Open Championship from Carnoustie. Leaders are yet to get out on the course. They will go about 7 p.m. UAE time. We're seeing some notable scoring today, though. The conditions are very conducive for players shooting under par. Justin Rose has shot a round of 64, 7 under par for his round. He's gone to a tie for six. From just getting across the cut mark, yesterday. He's moved dramatically up the leaderboard. He's 4 under par and tied for 6th. 2 shots behind the leaders yet to get out. That's Zach Johnson and Kevin Kisner. Other rounds of note today, we've seen Tiger Woods on the golf course at the moment. He is 2 under par for his round after 6 holes. He's moved up to tie for 21st, 2 under par. But we are seeing plenty of numbers in red, Chris, and we are seeing that players will have to move with birdies today to get up that leaderboard and really get jockey for position for the final day tomorrow. But currently leaders, Zach Johnson, Kevin Kisner, they'll tee off about 7 p.m. UAE time.
Formula One qualifying is coming to a conclusion over at the Hockenheim Ring in Germany. Matthew Fortune's across it.
Well, a fairly normal Q2 in relation to Q1, unfortunately, Chris. No massive drama. The big four are through, as we would expect. Valtteri Bottas, my apologies, setting the quickest time there with Verstappen in at second, Raikkonen third, and Vettel fourth.
Yes, indeed. If you are just joining us, Lewis Hamilton out in Q1. He will start tomorrow's race in 14th. He was even trying to push his car back to the garage. There is a lot of time to get it back there. It wasn't to be. Time elapsed. Lewis Hamilton will be a frustrated man this evening. He will start tomorrow's race in 14th. What about the rugby? 3 down, 1 to go in Super Rugby quarterfinal weekend.
Yeah, it's the final quarterfinal from Johannesburg Emirates Park, where the hosts, the Lions, are taking on the Jaguares from Argentina, and the local team, the Lions, are going well. Halftime here, 24-9, they lead. 3 tries for Combrink Vorster and Malcolm Marks. That's against the 3 penalties from Nicolas Sanchez for the Argentinian side. 24-9. The winner of this match will take on the New South Wales Waratahs next weekend. In the other semi-final in Super Rugby, we'll see the Hurricanes travel to Christchurch to take on the Crusaders.
32-man break in Stage 14 of the Tour de France, and they are clocking along nicely.
Yeah, we're pushing about a 9-minute gap now, Chris. Again, there shouldn't be too much read into that. There's no one within that group that's making any threat to the general classification, which suggests, therefore, that Team Sky, who are in total control of the peloton, as I say, about 8-9 minutes back, are probably having quite an easy day, and this is exactly what they want. They're going to start feeling it in their legs soon. They're now heading into a Category 2 climb, followed by a Category 3 for the final 75 kilometres. We expect, therefore, that 32-man group to probably start to fracture a little bit. The strongest climbers within that group will start to put a little bit of distance between. But as I say, 8-9 minutes, it won't make much difference to the general classification, but it's still worth keeping an eye on.
So Bradley Wiggins has been speaking to ITV4 over in the UK. He's had some very interesting things to say. David Miller, I did tell you that he is of the opinion that the TUEs, that is therapeutic use exemptions, need to be scrapped. Bradley Wiggins has come back on that exact point. Very interesting argument here. He says, I don't think it is possible to do away with TUEs. You appease certain individuals on Twitter and in the press, and people have genuine medical problems. Alec Dossett, for example, has haemophilia and needs medication. Just to say we don't have any TUEs to appease certain people is not going to work, and it does athletes an injustice. He goes on to say, people say if you're sick you shouldn't be racing, but you want to push on. You're paid to race. It's become a bit of a mess. If you're asthmatic, how can you be an elite athlete is the question that is always posed. Well, it's a genuine thing. Exercise-induced asthma. It makes a mockery of people's problems. Fair argument, that, from Sir Bradley.
It's a fair argument from the man with all the criticism levelled at him for making the most of the rules. And
indeed,
this is the big problem. I completely agree with the sense of doing away with TUEs is just not feasible, because, as he says, there are particular illnesses, afflictions that aren't affected that, in the more traditional sense, like you would think asthma. The problem is maximising that reach. And the big controversy around Wiggins, and we don't want to start that whole discussion with just a few minutes left to go, is he cited as a serious asthma concern for the reason for his TUE. This is an asthma concern that held him back so much that he needed all of these gains that he never mentioned once in his autobiography.
Absolutely. It does leave a little question mark, shall we say, on that front. But that is a conversation for another day. Just want to round off very quickly one other sporting story of the week that we haven't discussed. And I know you are a huge fan of boxing, Matt. AJ, Anthony Joshua, the heavyweight champion, will step back into the ring on September 22nd against Alexander Povetkin, the Russian. How do you see that one going? Is that a tune-up fight for AJ ahead of stiffer tests in the future?
I think a tune-up fight would be an enormous discredit to Povetkin. I don't think for a second that Joshua will be beaten, for sure. I think it's certainly the hardest challenge he's faced since he fought Vladimir Klitschko, 18 months, two years ago now? It's certainly not a tune-up fight. It was a mandatory challenge, and there's a reason Povetkin's in a mandatory challenge position. It's because he's got the tools, you know, and he can cause problems. The knockout of David Price on the Joshua undercard, I was with you, I think, when we watched that, was harrowing, and he's got some real power, Povetkin. Of course, there's controversy that comes with him, twice banned for misuse of drugs since his defeat, which was to Vladimir Klitschko, I think about 4 or 5 years ago. But he does have tools. It's easy to write him off because he's not a big name. It's easy to write him off because he's not Deontay Wilder, which is the fight that everybody wants. And that's true. The difficulty is for Joshua. He wants to face Wilder with the view to becoming the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. He has to get past this challenge. I think he will get past this challenge. I think he has to fight a lot better than he has done in his last two fights, but I back him to do that. He's had a good run. He's had a good camp, and though it's only been announced recently, he's probably had a long, long time to get ready for this one. I think he'll win in 7, maybe 8. September 22nd. My flights are booked already, Chris. I've been talking to you. Me and you are going back. Don't you worry about that. I think it will be a good fight. I don't think it's one that people should write off, quite like the Takam fight was in the end. I think he'll pose more problems than Parker. It will certainly be interesting to watch. And then all eyes, of course, focus on April.
Do you think Deontay Wilder is a shoe-in for April? Because I am a cynic when it comes to the world of boxing. And Jarrell Miller, who many of you might not be aware of, is a decent heavyweight boxer, more than a decent heavyweight boxer. He's unbeaten in 22 fights. Number 3 on the rankings for the IBF, I think it is. He is someone who is obviously clearly talented. He moseyed on in to that pre-fight press conference this past week to have said some choice things to AJ and about Anthony Joshua's mother, which we won't get into now. But is he trying to affect the natural order? Is he looking at potentially filling that void in April and then Deontay Wilder being pushed back another 6 months or so by Camp AJ?
I find it very difficult to believe, Chris, that Wilder will be pushed back. But what I do think, and this is pure speculation on my part, is that I don't think AJ is unduly concerned by Wilder. I think the big thing around Wilder is the size of the fight, not the challenge that the big American will present. I therefore think what might happen is that Miller will fight Wilder. He certainly needs a fight before April if it's going to be AJ Wilder. And if Miller causes what would be an upset, AJ still has his big American fight. That's what I think. The Miller being on stage, you said moseyed on into that press conference. I think he was there from the start. He was just... It seemed a little bit too scripted. Of course, Eddie Hearn and Matt Trum have made a big bumper deal in America to start making some noise. And this is the one... Well, there are many things that frustrate about boxing, but it's all just a little bit too well organised.
Absolutely.
But it's fascinating. We've got a big 6 months ahead. AJ, obviously, the pride of Britain, a phenomenal man, a phenomenal fighter. I think he... Whatever happens with AJ is going to be interesting to watch.
Cannot wait. That is September 22nd. AJ going up against Alexander Povetkin. It is almost time for us to say goodbye. 6 p.m. has ticked around. Mark Archer, I think I know what you are doing this evening. You're heading on home, ordering a takeaway and watching the golf.
I'm definitely having some food on the couch, and I'll be watching, tuning into Sky TV to see what's happening with the Open Championship. All the leading groups will go out in the next hour. The leaders tee off at 7 p.m. UAE time. And particularly interested in see what Rory McIlroy does today. It's well known that he doesn't favour tough conditions when the wind blows. It's still, it's calm. It's really in his ballpark today what he can do. Can Rory put a score and get himself in contention for another major title? 2014 was the last time he won the Open Championship. Can he add to those 4 major championships? It's been a long time for him drinks for the Northern Irishman.
Absolutely it has. Mark Archer, big thank you for all of your work this afternoon. Matthew Fortune, a big thank you to you. I told you, it's not all bad being on the airwaves of Dubai 103.8. We don't bite on this particular show. Well done for your debut.
Thanks very much, Chris. 3 hours in your company and, of course, Mark's. There's no better way to spend a Saturday.
Oh, I'm sure that's not the case. I think you're trying to butter me up for future work, my man. But listen, thank you very much for your time and efforts this afternoon. A big thank you to Benji, to Hector, and all the team back at Dubai Eye HQ as well. And a big thank you to you guys for tuning in, as always, on your Saturday afternoon. So there it is then, Formula 1, German Grand Prix tomorrow afternoon. We'll have the final day of the Open Championship. And let us not forget, there's another stage in the Tour de France. It is Mark Archer and myself, Sports Tonight tomorrow evening from 7 p.m. So do tune in for that. Until then, though, have yourselves a fine remainder of your weekend. It's Sunday tomorrow. We're all back to work. We'll look forward to your company once again from 7 p.m. tomorrow evening. Good night.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.